Last time on the Skip and Josh podcast.
By the way, I'm recording all this for posterity. Is that the word?
Yes. Well, we are posting this as a podcast, so the whole world can hear it.
But I mean, I'm also actually typing everything that you're saying.
That's good. That's good.
The Skip and Josh podcast is on now.
Okay, so it is 11:49 p.m. Eastern Time. The NCAA basketball championship game just ended, and Skip and I wanted to record this special episode with our reaction, not so much to this game specifically, but to the tournament as a whole. So here we go.
And what you didn't mention is that we're recording together in my house.
Right. Well, I didn't call you. There was no phone ringing. So yeah. Everyone knew that I was sitting right next to you.
Okay.
So anyway, I have a few questions. First of all, and this could be the uniform segment of the show.
Uniforms.
Right away to the uniforms.
Well, because this is the first thing that's coming to my head.
Okay.
Why do the Michigan players wear pink shoes when there's no pink at all in their uniform colors?
I'm glad you asked that question. I actually Googled that earlier today because I noticed the pink shoes on Saturday and I was wondering what's it all about. So what I read today was originally there was only one player wearing the pink shoes. That was the guy with four names that they always say his name in full. They can't just say his last name. Mm-hmm. So Muhammad Ali Abdul Rahman, right? Every other player, they say Matthew Smith, but here they have to say all four. He was the one that started the pink shoes, and then now three or four other guys now copied him and also wear the pink shoes. And I read that they started it because on February 14th, Michigan did a breast cancer awareness where they all wore the pink shoes and they won by like 20 points that game. And Abdul Rahman decided he wanted to keep wearing them because they won by so much. It was good luck. So he kept wearing them. And then you know the role that Michigan got on now, right? The end of the season, the Big Ten tournament, and now almost going all the way, you know, in the NCAAs. So they just kept wearing them and more players started to wear them too. But it does look weird, right?
Well, you know, if that happened in the NFL and it wasn't the month of October, the players who wore the pink shoes would have been fined.
But you know that... The NFL stands for the No Fun League, right? So why not let them have fun? They're kids.
That's fine. Whatever. Actually, the NFL did allow celebrations this year, so they're getting a little bit more fun.
But they had no choice, right? I mean.
All right. Well, that's it for the uniform segment.
That was quick.
But I do have some things that are bugging me.
You're kidding me? Boy, are you bugging me, man? I'm getting bugged now. Whoa, man.
Already?
Yes. And I think they're bugging you too. First of all, and I this even though I knew this going into the weekend, it bugs me that they play the Final Four in a football stadium. It bugs me that the court is elevated and the bench is like a dugout in baseball. And it also bugs me that we here in Canada don't get to see the Final Four or the championship game on CBS or TBS. We have to watch the international feed, which is done by ESPN, meaning that we didn't get to see One Shining Moment, although I don't think it's out yet, but we're going to scour the internet for it as soon as we're done recording this episode. So those are the things that bug me.
Right. So my promise to everybody is that I'm going to post the One Shining Moment on our website as soon as, you know, I can find it online, which should be in a little while. I agree with you about some of what you said. I can't stand the dugout benches. I really can't stand it. First of all, I feel it's dangerous.
Yeah.
Right?
True.
And I feel that it doesn't the way the bench can interact with their teammates for great plays by celebrating, jumping, you know what I mean? Just the camaraderie of the bench, it seems like some of that's lost because they're
so far away.
They're in their little compartment, you know?
And it's further away. Like, the sideline is further away than it is in a regular game.
Right. So I don't like that. The football stadium, I mean, we've been seeing games in football stadiums forever. You know, I mean, me and you have been to games in football stadiums. No,
but even if, like, they say, the NCAA says it's because they want more people to be able to come to the games. And sure, more people do get to go into the game. But the thing is, if you're sitting up in the nosebleeds, you can't see anything. Yeah, you're basically watching the big screen.
Remember when we were in the Carrier Dome in Syracuse and we were way up top? It was bad.
Yeah.
It was bad.
So, I mean, it's only the fans who are like closest to the floor that actually get to see the game.
Right.
And so you might as well just have it in a basketball stadium or arena or whatever you want to call it. And okay, so you'll only get 21,000 people or whatever it is.
And I would like, you know, all throughout the tournament and in every region, there's like the hosting school, right? So mm-hmm. there's a connection to a university or college
right.
in the venue, yeah. like whether they are or not. But now, then they go to San Antonio and like, what's the university? I mean, I might be totally off here. I don't know what the university is in San Antonio that's hosting. I don't think there is one. I think it's just
There must be a school in San Antonio.
I mean, there must be, but like, it seems like they just put it there, you know, because they figure they're going to, it's almost like rewarding the city for the Super Bowl.
It's like the Super Bowl. They just rotate the same, I guess, 4 or 5 or 6 cities and that's it.
Yeah. So what about like, first of all, we didn't even talk about actually any basketball yet.
Okay.
So congratulations to Villanova.
Oh, did they win?
Yeah. I mean, it's just like every other year. Well, not every other year, but most years, the tournament kind of gets worse as it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean worse, but I mean the most exciting part of the tournament is day 1 and day 2.
Yeah.
And then if your team could keep going, obviously, if you're a Villanova fan, you think that today was great. Right? And you're never going to forget it. And the Final Four and everything. But I mean, the 2 Final Four games weren't great. And the championship game wasn't really close tonight either. You know, but
And for all the upsets that happened in the first, actually, 3 or 4 rounds,
mm-hmm.
Everything went true to form in the end. A number 1 seed ended up winning the entire tournament against the number 3 seed.
Right. And the number 1 seed that most people thought was the best team in the country. You know, I know, many people pick Virginia. A lot of people thought they had Virginia. But, I mean, in our bracket challenge, I could see you're looking at it right now. The team that was picked the most was Villanova with 9. And I think Virginia here, I could 4. See, was picked 4 or 5, right? So like, they were the consensus. Duke was picked 4 by 4 different people. Arizona, 3. You know, Villanova was the team that people thought were going to win, and they did. And they had the best team. What are you going to say? Yeah, they had the best team.
They lost 4 games all season long. So, you know, and this was not a young team. So a lot of these guys were on the team 2 years ago when they won the championship.
Right.
So, you know, props to them.
I mean, the performance they put on in the semifinal game on Saturday was one for the ages, right? I mean, they hit
a record amount of 3-pointers in that game.
They had 13 threes already hit before they hit a free throw.
Yeah, and 13 threes, I think, in the first half.
Right.
And I think the record for a game is 15, and they ended up breaking that record.
But that's a record that's going to get broken again.
Well, I don't know about that. Well, this team was insane.
No, I know this team's insane, but the way we talked about it 2 or 3 episodes ago, I think the way college basketball is going, it's just going to be more threes.
Unless they move the 3-point line further back.
Yes, which is what they should do.
Right.
I feel that's what they should do, because right now the players are so good at shooting threes. You know, it's not like it was 20 years ago. Now the kids grow up practicing threes, you know, like the 3-pointer is so, it's so part of the game now that players are much more skilled at hitting them. So that 3-pointer from the top of the key right now in college basketball is just a long jumper. You know, it's not a particularly difficult shot for the really, really good players. So I think it is time to move it back. I mean, we already both agreed they should move it back. Maybe not to NBA range, but something a little bit more than what it is right now.
It's interesting because a lot of teams are built already for next year and the year after mm-hmm. based on how they've recruited. And so to now tell teams all of a sudden, hey, starting next year, the 3-point line is going to be further back. You can't really do that.
Right.
You're going to have to give them some sort of warning. Like, it's 2018 now, something like starting in 2020 or 2021, the 3-point line is going to be moved further back, because that might affect the way coaches recruit.
That's a fair thing. But do you really think they will change it? I mean, I haven't heard rumblings. I mean, honestly, the first people that I heard talking about the possibility of moving the thing back was us.
I didn't hear this firsthand, but apparently Dick Vitale was talking about it, and he says that the line should be moved further back.
I mean, I listened to the Sports Reporters podcast and also the one that we've been talking about, the One Shining podcast, and they both talked about it a little bit, but only in the last week. And we were already talking about that, you know? So I think the fact that some of the people in the mainstream media, like especially Dick Vitale, if he says something about it, you know, people tend to listen, you know? So
the truth is, the one person who actually can influence any change is Jay Billis. It's true.
Why do you say that?
No, Jay Billis is like, he, in my opinion, when I need any information on college basketball, to me, he is the guru. He's right. The czar, or whatever you want to call him.
Right.
Like, if there was an NCAA basketball commissioner, it should be him, because he actually has very level-headed thoughts and ideas on how college basketball should be run.
Mm-hmm.
So if he suggests it, it may actually happen.
Right.
That's... Not tomorrow, but...
Right, right. No, I get that. I get that. How do you feel like about the tournament as a whole? Like, was it a... How do you think this tournament compares to other tournaments? Like, was it better, worse, more exciting, less exciting? Like,
it's hard for me to say, because the truth is I don't even remember last year's tournament or the one from 2 years ago or 3 years ago. The only ones I really remember are the years that Duke won the whole thing. So, I mean, I watched actually more of the tournament this year than I have in recent years. I know that. And there seemed to be a lot of exciting games. There seemed to be a lot of buzzer beaters. I think there were only two overtime games, and Duke was in one of those. So I thought it was a good tournament. And the fact that you had a lot of upsets, that makes it a good tournament. So,
right.
You know, I think it was a good tournament.
You know, when the tournament comes out, the selection Sunday, and then everybody sees all the seeds, right? And then within 2 hours or even an hour, everybody's complaining. The selection committee got it wrong. This team shouldn't be a one. This team shouldn't be a two. This team shouldn't be a five. This team shouldn't be a four. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, most years they get it right. You know, everybody complains about stuff, but it's like, when I say they get it right is, when I say they get it right, I mean, is they don't get it wrong, in that it's impossible to get it right. How do you seed this thing? He can't.
The only way they would be perfect, and this happened, I think, the last time the Final Four was in San Antonio, the only way they'd be right is if all four one seeds played in the Final Four, which, again, that did happen the last time the Final Four was in San Antonio. And that's the only year I remember that happening in the 20-some-odd years that I've been following college basketball.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you always usually have ones, twos, and threes making up at least three out of the four, and then sometimes there's an outlier that makes it, you know, mm-hmm. In that fourth spot. But I mean, the job of picking this tournament is like pretty impossible. So I hate when people criticize the selection committee, because, you know, like, how could it be different? How could it be better? They do their best, and that's what it is, you know?
But I think, okay, so you're right. It's impossible to see this tournament. But when you have all these experts who've watched hundreds of college basketball games all year long saying that, you know, this team, Oklahoma, for example, doesn't deserve to be in the tournament, and then another team that didn't get in should be in the tournament. You know, if you have one person saying that, okay, maybe whatever. But when you have everybody saying that, then maybe they did make a mistake. Now, the truth of the matter is, whoever that 11 seed or 12 seed or 16 seed is, they're not going to end up winning it all anyway.
Right.
So it's a difference between getting in a tournament or not getting in, but it's not going to change who the eventual winner is.
Right, right.
Because really, even though there's 68 teams in this, there's really only, what, 8 teams that have a legitimate shot to win it all, I think?
Yeah, maybe you could make the argument that some years there's only 3 or 4 that you think could win it. And maybe this year, maybe it's 10, but it's not like, it's not everybody. That's right, for sure. Right. You know, that's for sure. Well, I mean, look, we're going to kind of, we've been talking about this March Madness since, you know, all of March, and we had a great time talking about it, that's for sure. I'm going to miss the tournament, but we'll look forward to it next year. There was a lot of excitement, though, in our bracket challenge, and a little bit of controversy, I think, no?
Yes. So as it stands, the final standings are now in, of course. And Darren Berger and Daniel Berg, again, no relation, and they don't even know each other, both ended up with a score of 221. Now, the CBS Sports website that we use to tabulate our pool says that the tie-breaking formula is the total score of the final game. Well, Darren picked a total of 151 and Dan picked a total of 153. Neither of them were correct. So I'm not sure who really should win the pool. One way to break the tie is who had the most correct picks. And if you do it that way, then Daniel Berg had 41 and Darren Berger had 37. So in my opinion, I think Daniel Berg should be the winner.
Right. But CBS Sports website has declared Darren Berger the winner because his tiebreaker score was closer to the what was, you know, what he predicted. The score was closer, like he had the closer tiebreaker score.
Are you sure that's why his name is ahead of Dan's? Maybe it's an alphabetical thing. I don't know. Like, I don't know why his name is higher. I really don't.
Well, no, that's why. He picked 151 and the other guy had 153 and 151 was closer to the total score.
But maybe it's just because Darren used an uppercase D and Dan used a lowercase D and the computer doesn't understand. So it's sorting it alphabetically.
Okay, well, you have a problem then because you're taking back with you the fabulous prizes that we got out of our prize closet.
Yes, I am.
And the first place prize is a little bit better than the second place prize.
It is a little bit better, yeah.
So
it's much better.
So you're going to have to take those both back to Toronto with you and award these prizes to the first and second placers.
Yeah, it's going to be very difficult. Maybe I have to get them both in a room at the same time. And give them some kind of skill testing question. Yeah.
The other highlight of the bracket challenge is that I came fourth.
Yeah, that's impressive. You came out of nowhere, actually, and you vaulted into fourth place, basically, you know, in the last week of this tournament.
Well, I had a high score most of the time. I was in the top five or six for most of the time, but it never looked. I mean, I knew I could never win because I had Villanova as champion and. So did the three guys ahead of me. Like, I knew I couldn't pass them, right? So
I'm happy to say I didn't finish in last place. Mm-hmm. You know, it was pretty close, but I didn't finish in last. So at least that happened.
I just want to point out a couple of interesting stats from the thing here. Mm-hmm. Carly Smith came in 10th. Mm-hmm. And her husband, Joe, came in 11th.
There was a time where we thought Joe might win it all.
Yeah. The other interesting one is... among the Bukovetsky family, mm-hmm. Harrison Bukovetsky came out on top. I think there was at least two or three entries in there.
Entries from the Bukovetsky family.
And what was the other one? Oh, yeah, of course. This is the most important one. You were like way down near the bottom.
27th.
Yeah.
Not and, last, though.
And your girlfriend came 9th.
Yes.
And she just picked them out of a hat, right?
Well, no, she actually did pick.
Yeah.
And she was asking me questions about like what's this team's nickname, you know, and where
what color jerseys do they wear?
No, not color, but where do they play? Like where do they play their home games? That kind of stuff.
Like where do they play their home games? That doesn't matter though.
No, but I mean, you know, that's what she wants to know. Like what city, what state is it in? You know?
So if it's a place she's been to, she
Yeah, she likes Tennessee a lot. She wants to go to Nashville. It's one of her places on her list that she wants to go visit.
That's why she picked Tennessee to win it all.
Yeah.
Oh, clever girl. Clever girl.
Yeah.
You got anything else?
No, I think that's it. I mean, the tournament seemed to zoom by really quickly. I can't believe it's already over.
Yeah, it did zoom by. It did zoom by. I felt like it was like just like yesterday we were talking about all those first round games. And
now the only thing I have to look forward to actually... The baseball season has started, so that's good timing.
Yeah.
And soon the NHL playoffs will start.
Right. So I think in our regular episode, which we'll probably resume over the weekend, we're probably going to devote most of the time to the start of the baseball season, which has been pretty cool so far, actually, with
a lot of controversial things.
Homers, Kevin Pillar stealing home for the Jays, Shohei Ohtani with his first win and DHing also in the opener. Like, there's some kind of cool stories out there. You know, a guy heckling Bryce Harper saying that he's overrated and then Harper homer. Did you see this?
I didn't see that.
It's great.
There was a manager who brought in a pitcher from the bullpen and he forgot to tell the pitcher to warm up and he wasn't ready to go.
All right. So, I mean, we look forward to like, you know, that's it. We're wrapping up college basketball. We're moving into the rest of sports, right?
Yeah. By the way, let's just say before we wrap up, Duke's team for next year looks phenomenal. So I can't wait to talk about that squad, especially because one of their best players is Canadian.
Well, I have a feeling if we're going to talk about Duke squads being phenomenal, we're going to be saying that every year for the next however.
Until Coach K retires.
Because it seems like Coach K has just embraced the one and done, and that's what it's going to be, right? Mm. Which kind of sucks. I felt that I was a little bit more detached from this year's Duke team because you don't have that feeling of like growing up with them and learning about them and you know, getting this attachment towards certain players. You didn't have that with these guys.
Yeah,
you know?
I just figured out the team like a week ago and now they're eliminated.
Right. But before we sign off, remember, you can listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Skip and Josh podcast wherever you listen, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, the podcast app of your choice. Everybody knows my favorite, Overcast. If you listen through Apple Podcasts, leave us a review. We'd love to hear from you. SkipandJoshShow@gmail.com. Darren Berger and Daniel Berg, if you want to send us an email stating your case why you should win the pool, you can do that. Via Twitter @SkipandJosh, or so also by liking and following our Facebook page, and always, as always, all the links to subscribe to the podcast are on our website, skipandjosh.com. All right, so I guess I'll speak to you next time.
Yeah.
The Skip and Josh podcast is over now. Don't worry, there'll be another episode soon.